This is 16.9, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. We're all about digital signage and have been since 2006. We cover what's interesting now and what will be interesting and important one day soon. And we filter out all the BS. This podcast is a chance to add depth and color to what we do online, and it gives smart people a chance to really talk about their companies and their ideas. You can hear new episodes weekly on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop, free of charge. 16.9 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful, ready-made, auto-delivered, and auto-updated content for screens. The last interview and meeting I took on my recent trip to Asia, getting a crash course on the technology and manufacturers doing fine-pitch LED, was with a company called Deep Sky. The LED display startup is based in Hong Kong, but it has deep French roots, as you'll be able to pick up easily in the accent of Antoine Dublé. He's the head of global sales for the company, but he's an engineer to the core. I rarely talk to someone in a sales function who is as technically sound as Antoine was. Having visited a range of manufacturing plants in the suburbs of Shenzhen and Taipei, it was fairly weird to find myself in an office tower high-rise in Kowloon that overlooks the harbor of Hong Kong. That building serves not only as head office and R&D lab, but down in the basement area, there's a core manufacturing facility. Deep Sky is not a typical LED company, nor is the product they're bringing to market. The fine-pitch LED displays we all know are made of tiny LED lights surface-mounted one by one on a circuit board. Deep Sky doesn't do that. They're using emerging technology called chip-on-board that does things very differently. And from Dublé's perspective, it can change the whole LED sign market. I just had my audio recorder going to spare me from taking notes in the meeting, but I realized as we chatted that our talk had the makings of a podcast episode. So here we go. So Deep Sky, can maybe start just giving me a background on the company.
Sure.
Here we are in Hong Kong, but you're French, and it sounds like there's a lot of French influence or background in the company.
You can say so, actually. Dr. Collot, our CEO, that you may meet while we tour the company. We were working together, him and I, in a company in France that was a system integrator for advertising applications.
Okay.
So we were providing some display solutions to advertising company. If my memory is correct, we got started in 2008 developing an LCD network of 70-inch panels for Metrobus,
okay,
which is a subsidiary of JCDecaux and advertising,
yep,
in the French Paris Metro and the French railway stations. We were also providing solutions to retail, both in LCDs, and we started having inquiries for larger sizes display,
mm-hmm,
and we got started reselling with some kind of innovation on the way we assemble the mechanics and so on, but using regular traditional LED tiles we were purchasing from Shenzhen.
Mm-hmm.
Laurent, who was a very creative and technological mind, went for several tours across China looking into what LED display manufacturers were doing,
mm-hmm,
him and his wife Hanping was from Shanghai, and looking at this, he had several ideas about how to make a good-looking and affordable narrow pixel pitch solution.
Mm-hmm.
Right from the start, the idea was to say, okay, SMD technology is probably the best way to go in terms of electronic assembly when you want to build a P8, which is what Lighthouse had it in mind when they got started with this. Down to P4, it's probably, or P3, it's probably very good.
Mm-hmm.
But we do believe that below P2, let's say, or below P4, depending on how you put the threshold, it seems to us like it's a limit of that technology. You just look at the manufacturing yield, top of the line SMD assembly machines,
mm-hmm,
you know, can work at. And you realize that if you want to connect millions of LEDs per square meter, you necessarily have to reheat because you need to repair, because you have defective colors, sub-pixel,
yeah,
or pixels. And if you reheat, you can see that the package of the LED is really stressed. This is not going to work well, and it won't be easy to scale up the manufacturing capability when you have to work in this kind of limit conditions.
Okay.
Call it that way. So Deep Sky's product that you have it in just in front of your eyes here is not only about chip and board. I mean, it's one of the very key thing we are introducing, so we can get rid of the SMD package.
Mm-hmm.
Technically speaking, saving around 30% of the product cost.
And why is that saved? Just because you're not doing all the packaging?
You don't have to do the packaging. Yeah. Okay. You do it differently. And working directly with bare dyes, we can also do any kind of pixel layout we like. We are not binded to doing square.
Rectangles.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So the first product we've been introducing that we called Viga benefit from a delta enhanced kind of pixel layout, which works very well mostly on rich content. So technically speaking, this product was finely tuned towards advertising and retail applications, mm-hmm. not really control room. I will discuss around this later on. We will mm-hmm. be introducing some also more traditional pixel layout for application like control room or corporate displays. But here you have a delta pixel layout. That's why you have those T's on the at the end to interleave the LEDs.
Okay.
You have one LED die on each T here. On
so
each
that tooth. That further minimizes any visible seam.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it also drastically improve the perceived resolution compared to the actual LED density. Mm-hmm. Which
is, and why is that?
But because you can play with virtual pixels.
Okay.
Like this pixel layout is copied from an old Hitachi patent dating back from the 80s that they developed for CRTs. And they actually come up with that to that because they assessed that mm-hmm. it was the best perceived resolution for the price you pay.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So we do chip and board, so we can also have a much higher LED density at a very good manufacturing yield,
mm-hmm.
because the yield of backend machines is much higher compared to SMD,
mm-hmm.
technically speaking. And then we had to invest a lot of R&D efforts, both on the product size and on the manufacturing side. You will see we are a company who assembles manufacturing equipment,
mm-hmm.
because, you couldn't develop such a product manufacturing it only with commoditized or commercially available manufacturing equipment.
Mm-hmm.
We had to invest a lot in developing proprietary machines to manufacture this in good conditions. So we technically speaking, have had to work on all the different technology bricks that make up a good LED product.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't rely, like most manufacturers are doing, on an ecosystem of ready available solutions. Like if you want to build a regular SMD display, you can buy a fully packaged Novastar LEDs.
Right.
You can buy a macro block driver. You can buy the Novastar Linsa receiving card and controller.
Yeah.
And basically, you can, with just an SMT line and some integration ladies, build up a solution that and you're good to go. Within weeks, you can be in business.
Right, which is why there's hundreds of them.
I guess so. If you buy a second-hand SMT line, you can really get started in a few months and very limited capital requirement to get to business.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't true in our situation. We couldn't find a way to design a cost-effective and reliable and good-looking product while sticking with the macro block kind of solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So we designed an ASIC LED driver. So we have our own custom driving circuitry,
okay,
which was a risky and development mandating also years from hand to end because, there is no miracle. Even Samsung requires a year to develop a true dedicated chip of this level of complexity. So we have designed our driving circuitry. We have designed the way we integrate and protect our LEDs, ensuring smooth and solid surface that people can touch, offering very good viewing angles. You will see it on our switched on samples. We have very high brightness capabilities thanks to that ASIC LED driver controller.
Mm-hmm.
We have designed all the electronics also at the back because, as we couldn't rely on the conventional Linsen and Novastar solutions,
mm-hmm.
first because, that kind of pixel layout can't be addressed with their solution. There were also tons of limitations that couldn't make us a product that is easy to manufacture and install while working with their system. So
mm-hmm.
we have the full processing chain from video capture down to LED dot control that we have fully engineered here. Mm-hmm. So that's on the product side. And on the process side, we also had to invent the way we can manufacture such a solution so that it can be cost controlled, quality controlled, and compatible with volume manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So it includes some steps that are that can be performed on standard commoditized equipment, but most of the manufacturing steps are currently done on our own specific machines.
And are these machines that you guys run, or do you use it through a contract manufacturer?
Well, that's
a little bit of both.
A little bit of both, depending on the manufacturing steps and the development phase.
Right, we're but I assume the secret sauce stuff you guys keep in house. Maybe the what they call it, the FR4 board or whatever, you can get punched out by somebody else.
Yeah, currently all the I would say IP. Critical steps are performed in-house. But you will see this floor, I will tell you, is dedicated to engineering and R&D. Mm-hmm. And downstairs, we have two other floors where material science labs, optic labs, and pilot manufacturing are organized.
This is seemingly a very, very expensive place to do R&D and have facilities.
I mean, if you're looking at the price per square foot, of course, it's more expensive than being in a remote area of mainland China.
Or something, yeah.
That is true. But on the other end, I mean, most of our cost, operating costs are not directly related to square feet, but mostly our engineering force. Mm-hmm. And it has proven to be hard enough to hire good engineers and scientists here. And I think it's still much easier here than on the other side.
Right.
And if you look at the cost of the total cost of having a true R&D team, just simply in Shenzhen downtown, is very comparable to Hong Kong and to some extent to Paris, and much cheaper than San Francisco.
So you can say to an engineer, do you want to work in somewhere in China you've never heard of, or do you want to work in Hong Kong?
That's
you know, one of the world's great cities.
I think you know the answer. So for us, I mean, Deep Sky is probably not the best suited organization for volume manufacturing like our competitors are.
Sure.
But we can definitely do good R&D here and pilot manufacturing.
Right.
So because as you got it, I mean, the process engineering is very linked to the product design, and these go back and forth. And our engineers work on the product, and let's say our team of mechanical engineering, they work on the product, but they also work on the machine, and they split their time like this. So they have a clear understanding of you know, the different related issues.
Right.
And this has to be close to some pilot manufacturing to have some you know, good feedback. And so we have the information on how to improve, and if things are really working as we expect them to be. This is not necessarily incompatible with transferring some of those equipments to a specific manufacturing partner, which we would trust enough so as to let him operate and then duplicate those equipments should we want to raise our manufacturing capability beyond the limit that would be manageable here by us.
But I assume with this product, at least in for the foreseeable future, this is like a super premium product. This is not going on highway billboards. This is not going in.
I mean, it's not up to me to decide, but we have not engineered that product saying, okay, let's make the most beautiful LED display. Mm-hmm. This is not our goal. You see, this product is a pitch 0.9 perceived resolution sensed to the delta. But in terms of if we were to lay down differently the LEDs, it would make it a 1.6 should it be 3-in-1 pixel layout. We could have gone to a much higher pixel density if we wanted to do so. But everything has been engineered here so as to say, let's make a display that looks fantastic compared to traditional SMB solution.
Right.
But let's try to fine-tune it the best way we can so that we offer a good enough visual experience at the best total cost of ownership.
Okay.
Because we want that product to be widespread. We believe there is a tremendous opportunity for a product that will look great enough and at a price that is compatible with what large users or large buyer of LED solution are used to pay.
So the discussions I've had with companies, I asked about the Sony product, the C Cletus or however you say it, and I asked about chip on board, they uniformly said they didn't believe Sony was really going anywhere with their product for a number of reasons. They said it; they didn't believe, feel it was really ready for the marketplace, and they'd sold very little of it. When it came to chip on board, they said, really interesting, but they couldn't work out how you would service a module if there was a problem, that you would have to take out the whole module. You couldn't repair on site or do any of those things. So when people say that, how do you respond to it?
First, to answer about the Sony position, I tend to agree that, in my opinion, Sony did a great job for very competitive cost for them, enjoyed tremendous traffic at key trade shows for them.
Yeah.
If you look back in 2012, as a CES, Sony introduced the Crystal TV, which was a 55-inch TV compared side-by-side with an LCD, and which was using micro LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, if you ask me, that was the tile that nowadays makes a Cletus product. So I believe Sony has made some development toward consumer TV using micro LEDs back in the days.
Mm-hmm.
They've made a tremendous job on the tile itself, I mean the optoelectrical part, and they probably came very quickly to the conclusion that it wouldn't compete in anyhow with a super cheap LCD solution, and they were right. So they never introduced it to the consumer market. But I believe there might be some kind of an initiative, maybe a local initiative at first, business solution in Europe or business solution in America, saying, okay, we have this. Please prepare me a crappy, quick and dirty solution so as to build it in video walls. And let's see what happens with that. And I believe that's how the Sony Cletus came to life. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
But it would explain many things.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure whether Sony has really, you know, from headquarters, given a strategic go forward with that solution.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure they are at this stage. I don't know, or I only have a few hints about who has been able to purchase it. Because even though it's super expensive, I mean, some people are ready to pay expensive prices. But I'm not even sure those guys have been able to really put their hand on. I've heard about a few Apple stores that have opened with that. Not that many. So I don't know. But what's for sure is, I mean, for Deep Sky, it has been a great thing that Sony has done so. Because for us, they have been the first guy to say, after our first public presentation ourselves, but they were the first to put it at a large scale. Okay, chip on board can look great. I mean, their screen looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it during trade shows, there is no question mark.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic. So for us, it has really helped educating the market, saying chip on board can be a fantastic solution visually wise.
Yeah.
Then to answer your second question about can chip on board be the future for narrow pixel pitch, even though you may not be able to repair SMD LEDs. I believe this way of saying, no, we won't go to chip on board because we won't be able to repair like we do with SMD, is a really narrow-minded way of looking at the problem you have today with your solution and not seeing if this problem would actually be the one you have to face while working with the different technologies.
Right.
The risk of having to repair while you work with SMD LEDs on narrow pixel pitch are not in any way comparable to the risk of damages you may experience with a chip on board solution. I mean, it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you were to compare DIP to SMD, the problems are different, so the way you solve them are different too.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, it's also that it mandates a lot of R&D. It's not that hard. I mean, it took us less than 6 months when we got started to have a first style with SMD connected with chip and board technologies, and then, well, you can say I have a screen with chip and board, but it does look crappy if you want to have something without color shift, with viewing angles, with consistent color across the screen, with a good manufacturing yield, and with well saturated colors. You may have seen, I don't know, across your trip or visiting the Infocom or ISE shows, some technological demonstrations of chip and board from some other manufacturer, excluding Sony and us, where you see very dull colors. I mean, the screen actually look not as great as an SMD one.
Yeah, I don't think so, but I might have.
But some people are trying. We're not the only one seeing a tremendous opportunity with chip and board. But it's very more complex to get it working great, because it does need to look better than SMD.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
I would imagine, certainly it's my impression, having seen a whole bunch of LED screens, SMD screens in the last 5 days, with a lot of packages, particularly around the edges, flicked off, they've been damaged in some way.
Super fragile.
Yeah. With this, it's protected, right?
Exactly.
Is this just a plastic, or is this like a resin or something?
It's a complex goo. I mean, a lot of our efforts to make our screen looking great was related to that black matrix technology we have developed. It is really a tough part of the screen to make this layer, optically compatible with what we want to do with those LEDs, and also super rugged. So that's why we don't need a true solution to repair, because we just don't have dying LEDs.
Is this the standard size that snap-in module that you use?
Yes, that's our LED module.
So if you do have an outage for whatever reason,
I would replace this one.
To pull it off and you snap a new one in, and you're done.
Exactly.
Are there the same issues or same best practices maybe that are used with SMD stuff, where you have a very narrow bin of LEDs that you're using, and therefore you're not snapping in a new one that's not going to match up with it?
You're pointing your finger at a very good point, which is that even if the economics would let our friend from the SMD side think that shouldn't repair, they would still be doing so, because as you mentioned, they are very limited with the bin of LEDs they are using. So if technically they have a limited stock of spare parts that they build at the same time they build their display.
Yeah, unless they're like a Samsung and they can buy massive quantities.
Yeah, but even though, I mean, you have the batch per color. Yeah. Then you have the batch of the package 3-in-1, and you have to take from that batch to make that display.
Yeah.
And it's also related to some extent to the batch of drivers. And that is the only way you get tiles that will consistently match together.
Right.
So if each time you lose a pixel because the guy during the assembly has hit a little bit too much, the two cabinets, one next to the other, and he lose a few LEDs.
Yeah.
You don't want to replace the entire tile. You'd rather repair individually the LED.
Yeah.
Even though it's, I mean, have you looked at people doing so below 1.6? I mean, it's crazy. So they reheat, they repair, because they can't change the LED modules with new ones they would have manufactured afterwards.
Right.
One of the key topic we have invested a lot of R&D in is actually a way so that we could have a relaxed LED binning strategy, thanks to a very sophisticated way of calibrating our screens and of controlling our video processing.
I mean, you don't need as narrow a bin?
And we can even mix and match.
Okay. Because you can control every pixel?
Yep.
And amplify, reduce, whatever you need to do.
We have a very sophisticated way of calibrating the screen. We don't do cabinet-based calibration like anyone else. some of the reason why you can't, when you want to do that correctly, use the off-the-shelf Novastar, Brompton, Linsen, and or Color Light for the calibration part. So, I mean, it just wouldn't have worked to some extent.
Okay.
So, well, to get back to your question, I don't think at all that the real reason to slow down a move towards cheap and more technology is the issue of being able to repair the pixels, because you just don't lose them. I mean, as with SMD technologies, you have a manufacturing yield. I mean, it's normal as in any manufacturing technology, but we have a full way of testing. So we know when we complete a module that it's spotless.
Right.
And once it's spotless for life. We just don't lose pixels. Except, of course, if you let it fall or you have some vandalism against it. But, I mean, it's the same for your camera or smartphone at some point.
Are there any practical limitations as to how many of these you could put together?
No, definitely. Sky is the limit.
Okay.
It's a tile design. You will see we have a sample downstairs that is curved.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Tessellated. So we basically can do any size, any shape.
Right. And you said this was in, if you were to equate it to a typical SMD, it equates to 1.6?
Yep.
Would you go tighter than that, or is there no good reason to?
In terms of product roadmap, so we are about to introduce publicly the first real commercial grade available in volume of our product, which will be that Delta 0.9 virtual 1.6 equivalent RGB density.
Okay.
And very shortly after, or maybe even at the right at the same time, we'll be introducing a product we call Altair, which is an equivalent in terms of LED density, but rearranged as 3-in-1, so it's a 1.68. And very shortly afterwards, we'll be introducing a true P1.1 RGB pixels, well, to compete directly with the Sony solution to show we can do better.
And are these things, are they vertically, they're vertically stacked, right? So it's red, green, blue. It's not...
This one is like this.
Oh, it is.
This one is all Delta.
But does that... Well, you said the viewing angles are really good anyway.
Well, you will make up your mind on it. But so to give you some visibility on our development path, as a technology startup company, we manufactured last year a beta version of our product, which is not that module. I should be able to show you some modules of the beta version, which was still relying on conventional macro block drivers, as it was requiring more time for us to finalize the ASIC design. So, but at least to show what we can do with chip and board, what kind of visual render we get with that Delta pixel layout. So we, but it was very complex and costly to manufacture. Before we actually got the true final design we could benefit from as soon as we get that ASIC done. So we delivered a few projects last year with that generation of product, and we have finalized early this year the true commercial grade product along with the manufacturing equipment, fully automated, that we mandate to build that in good conditions.
So the stuff that was out in the, or that is out in the field right now, like you mentioned a store in New York, that's kind of beta sites to show this stuff exists, it's real, it's, we're out of the lab, but really it's just
it's
now
just
that you're
of the lab.
Fully out
of the
lab.
That's what we did. So it has some drawbacks, obviously, either linked to the driving circuitry and electronic design overall, which was not much greater compared to traditional SMD solutions. I mean, we were using the same kind of stuff.
Right.
But also, I mean, we had to invent the process steps to build this kind of display technology. And what you do when you do that is that first you do it at a lab. In lab conditions, and you manufacture at lab grade, so you may not have the accuracy you need, or you don't know at that stage which level of accuracy you do need to make it look right. So benefiting from that experience, I think we built about in total 50 square meters of that beta product. So it gave us a strong feedback on what we were doing, and now we are finishing. You will see the machines, fully automated machines we have come up with. And that will allow us to build that V1 generation of product in the best condition we need to really have a solution that, visually speaking, is at least better than Sony.
Yeah.
Because we have much higher brightness capability. We can do true HDR, like the Sony Dolby, the Dolby Vision standard. We can go up to, with this pixel density, up to 3,500 nits. So we don't.
The Sony ones aren't very bright, are they?
No, they're not at all. They're 1,000 nits calibrated D93. I don't know who the hell calibrated D93, but that's the only way they could get the 1,000 nits they claim they have. I'm sure at D65 they probably don't even have half of that brightness.
I understood some of that. I don't know what D93 means, but
D93, it's mean like it's you, normally you calibrate, it's a white balance.
Okay.
So when you calibrate D65, which is a standard for video, it means a certain balance between red, green, and blue to
right.
make a white that is the D65 whites. It means 6,500 Kelvin. In
right.
terms of, you have it also in lightning, 2,000 Kelvin light bulb. Looks very yellow, looks very warm. D9000 light bulb gives you a kind of hospital ambience, very cold.
Right.
Because it's more bluish.
Right.
The blue LED is more efficient than the red LED. So if you calibrate D93, you have a white that is very bluish.
Yeah.
But more powerful.
Okay. Is the, you know, we talked a lot about the Sony product. When you compare, when this is on the market, comparing it to a standard surface mounted narrow pitch product, that's whether it's 0.9 or 1.6, however you want to compare it against, are you paying a lot more for your product versus theirs, or is it going to be price competitive?
You mean compared to Sony or compared to SMD?
Compared to SMD.
I mean, we don't see good reason why, as we are introducing our product to market, we should price it lower compared to SMD, because we pride ourselves of offering a visual experience that is much greater. And I do believe there is a significant portion of that market that is eager for a solution that would be less risky to install, easier to maintain,
sure,
compared to traditional SMD. And they would value, I believe, more of all, the improvement in terms of visual quality. So we don't see any reason why we shouldn't price our product slightly above, in terms of like for like in pixel density,
right,
as SMD.
The interesting thing about this is I could imagine architects and visual designers for office spaces, commercial spaces, or people designing airport corridors and things like that would look at this in the same way that they look at ceramic tiles.
Exactly. Laura has this vision also of the active wall. And as soon as the price goes down, I mean, the marble is not cheap either. And at some point, the difference between the two, considering the experience you're offering to your
visitors.
Set
the mood for whatever you want, by time of day or... Yeah, it could be a rainforest as people are walking to work, and could be, I don't know what, on the way back. Whatever it needs to be.
Limitless applications.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 16.9, that's 16-9.net, every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 16.9 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 16.9 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.